Is that all in North America? And and how has that part of your life influenced you today? How has your squatting experiences linked to your long-term dedication to creating art? Can you talk a bit about that, your experiences?
Sure. I was very involved in community activism in the Lower East Side of Manhattan in the 1980s and 90s, when we had a very active neighborhood movement which was focused around issues of housing and homelessness, gentrification, police brutality, community gardens. And one aspect of that was that people were breaking into abandoned buildings and turning them into housing, into affordable housing, without color of law. So then that would be squatting. And I got into that because it was something that was going on in the community. I knew the people doing it, and they wanted help with it, and they wanted support. I already lived there in the neighborhood, so when I was squatting, I was actually subletting out my own apartment so that I could help to participate in rebuilding this building and living there. So I was not in the level, I didn't have the level of insecurity of other people, but it was a real lesson in how to do certain things. And we held, at one point we held about 30 buildings, and eventually people got, they lost about half of them, and then the last 12 or 13 were legalized very recently. But it was a struggle that went on for almost two decades before it was resolved. You know, I was involved in a number of situations where we had to block wrecking equipment to keep buildings from being lost. And we did actually save some of the buildings that were going to be demolished. So that was, you know, pretty inspiring to me. I kind of feel like that was my education, was the years I was squatting. That was when I learned about how things really work in the world. Because it was very hands-on, and I got to test out ideas and see what ideas actually worked and how the political system actually worked, as opposed to, in theory, how the legal system worked.
Was this before you were
working? Well,
with?
Okay. If you, it was actually in between.
Okay,
these two books,
with,
because
you
the initial
he's
work
to you don't have
yeah,
to fuck people
yeah,
over.
Yeah, the initial work I did, and you don't have to fuck people over, was largely theoretical, but there is work there in support of the squatter movement and other movements in that were in the community I was in. But it's from a very theoretical perspective. I tended to use a universal figure, and part of that is because we thought it was a great idea at the time, and part of it's also because I didn't really have a lot of specifics in life. I was pretty young when I did that work, and you know, I was in my 20s when I did most of that work. And then when I got involved in the squatter movement, you know, I had a lot of hands-on experience in organizing and fighting the state and trying to work with other people and trying to get other people to get along with each other. And, you know, the result of that is a book I wrote called War in the Neighborhood, which is, you know, it's a fairly rough book. It's, you know, there's a little bit of disillusion in that book, and I sometimes wish I'd waited a little longer before I wrote it. Because in the long run, although I left the squatter movement in the Lower East Side in the mid-90s, the people who persisted wound up owning their buildings, so they were successful. And that's great. You know, I mean, it's phenomenal. And so that's not in that book. That's not in War in the Neighborhood. So someday I may write a revised War in the Neighborhood that would include that material.
That's a good idea.
But you know, I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot about the difference between law and law as it exists on paper and laws as they are actually practiced. I learned the difference between politics and theory and politics as it's actually practiced. So I like I say, I considered that period of my life to be my education. I think that the work I'm doing, say, in disaster and resistance, a lot of that is very much informed by the understanding from squatting of land occupations and control of physical space and how that becomes a very important political idea. You know, I think everything I do now is informed by my squatting experience. The book I'm doing now about the economic crisis, there is a real focus on people seizing these foreclosed houses because it's a similar situation on a much larger scale. In the 70s and 80s, you had this abandonment of rental property by landlords who would generally burn down buildings to get their insurance and then disappear, and then the state became the owner of last resort of that property, and then the state is sitting on large numbers of abandoned buildings. Well, today, you know, they've gotten the government off their backs, and the banks are on our backs instead, and so now banks are holding large, vast amounts of empty foreclosed houses, the whole city's worth of empty houses owned by banks, very often banks that are on the other side of the world and have no interest in that property. You know, like you go through certain neighborhoods of Cleveland and, you know, one bank is owned by Wells Fargo in California, and one house is owned by Wells Fargo in California, and one house is owned by Deutsche Bank. The next one is owned by Lloyd's of London, you know? So you have all of this empty property now being warehoused by the financial institutions. So I think that we're going to have a struggle. I'm not sure how this relates to Canada, but certainly we're going to have a struggle in the United States over all this empty space that is being warehoused by the banks. You know, in writing about that and working on that, you know, my squatting experience definitely informs that.
Your illustrations are considered by many as very influential and revolutionary. You don't ignore the problems that many people wish away. How much of your work is fact and fiction? Can you elaborate a little bit on that, on what informs your research? The other day when you lent me a couple of your books, the You Don't Have to Fuck People Over to Survive in Disaster and Resistance, I shared it with some people that I went to a talk, and a couple of people noticed I had the book, and they both looked at it, and one fellow was just, he was curious about how referenced, in particular the Disaster and Resistance book. What do you say to people critiquing your comics for not having included in them any academic proof or any of the other acceptable sources?
I think it's pretty heavily referenced, okay. But most of the reason it doesn't have standard footnotes is because most of my reference is direct experience life reference. Mm-hmm. And then I back that up with either online research or reading. You know, like the material on the Bedouin, I went out to, you know, the what are called the unofficial villages, villages that are not sanctioned by the government in the Negev of the Bedouin, with people who were organizing and working with the Bedouin. And I did sketches and I met people, and it's built from that. And then once I was back in New York, I say, well, gee, I really ought to read up on this so that I have some background on what I saw. But, you know, my first take is from seeing it. Mm-hmm. Or likewise, the piece on the wall, you know, I went out there and I sketched the wall. I spent a number of days at the observation camp that was set up by Anarchists Against the Wall. Mm-hmm. And
can you provide some background on Anarchists Against the Wall for those who aren't familiar with them?
Anarchists Against the Wall is... It is a group of young Israelis who oppose the building of the so-called separation barrier or apartheid wall. They oppose the building of that fence. And they have organized nonviolent resistance to the building of that fence. which has included incidents where people pulled the fence down and were actually shot by the Israeli state. And these are mostly Israelis who are doing it. So it's a very interesting group in that sense. And I think that a lot of people would be surprised at the amount of opposition there is to the actions of the Israeli state in Israel.
Good. In general, what research do you do to convey the storylines in your work?
I need to have an understanding of my subject material, and then I need to have a sense of an understanding that goes beyond a factual understanding or reading understanding. I have to see what things look like. I have to actually meet people. I want to get beyond the sort of standard illustrator's mode of working off of a photo file or working off of the internet. I want to actually go out and make some of my own sketches. Or if I'm using photos, take some of my own photos. Say the research for the material on New Orleans was that I went down to New Orleans and volunteered with Common Ground, as thousands of people did. Gutting houses and doing renovation work, and that was how I learned about the issue. And then as time went on, I also got involved in the struggle to defend public housing in New Orleans, which was under attack after the flood. And I did posters and banners for them. I even at one point worked on building a float that was used to defend public housing in New Orleans. And so I worked on those campaigns, and by doing that I became more informed about the issue and was able to write about it. At one point I organized a group of sort of older guys who'd been part of the squatters movement, who went down in New York, who went down to New Orleans with their sons, a lot of them, to rebuild houses. So we had a group called the Lowy Side of New Orleans Caravan, where about 20 people drove down to New Orleans and did renovation work for a couple weeks. And that's where you get the material. For me, that's how I get the material.
How do you feel about copyright? Actually, I'd personally like to know, because I'd like to use an illustration of yours for a logo for a grassroots collective here in Guelph. How do I ask this? Are you anti-copyright, or are you morally opposed to people plagiarizing or using your work without permission?
Am I anti-copyright? That's an interesting question.
I wanted to use one of your images. Well, actually, I would
well,
just be influenced.
I will give you permission to use certain images, then it won't be a violation of copyright.
Okay.
As far as anti-copyright, it's a bit of a complicated question for me, because so much of my work has been lifted and used very constructively, but I do maintain the legal copyright on it. And that is so that somebody who'd want to make a whole lot of money on it can't do that. Like, if you steal one of my images, there's nothing I can do to you as long as you're not making money. I can't sue you for money you didn't make. So the copyright really doesn't prevent you from putting something on a leaflet or using it as a tattoo, because you haven't appreciated financially from that. The copyright is to protect myself from big corporations who would love to put their copyright on it. And comic book artists have a long history of having their ideas stolen by corporations. So I do have rights on my material, but I also know that people do use it. I would prefer to be spoken to by those people. I would prefer to be credited, but I do know that people use the work. And in a lot of cases, the reuse of the work has been very, very powerful. My material has been used on flyers, on posters, been made into murals, all over the world. The African National Congress used it. You know, people.
What did they use it for? National Congress.
They had a poster calling for a general strike, and they reworked one of my graphics to be a graphic for a general strike. And I found that years later, somebody just showed it to me. I went, "Wow, they took the graphic." You know, what are you going to say? I know it was used by people protesting in Seattle, and I wasn't in Seattle. So that's great, you know, and I know in the squatters movement there were certain images that were used and recycled as leaflets all the time. And I do know that a lot of people wear patches and t-shirts so that you don't have to fuck people over to survive logo. It kind of annoys me that they're selling them and, you know, pocketing it. And at this point, I am now selling that t-shirt. So you can buy it from me Tuesday night when I do the show.
Right. Can plug in the show right and now if you want.
Yeah, we're going to be doing, I'm going to be doing a slideshow of my comics at, I guess it's called Video Ed.
Ed Video. At 40 Baker Street, downtown Guelph.
Yeah, and what I do is something called a cartoon concert, which is an art form invented by cartoonist Vaughn Bodie back in the 70s, where the cartoonist presents slides of their work and they accompany that with live spoken word. So Vaughn would actually do the voice of his characters. What I do is more like a poetry reading, and I actually have music that backs it up. I have some really amazing musicians I work with in New York City. And so I'm going to be presenting material from both books and from both You Don't Have to Fuck People Over to Survive. Wow, I love saying that on radio. From You Don't Have to Fuck People Over to Survive and Disaster and Resistance. And that will be also along with a presentation of Lee Brownhill's new book, which is called Land, Food, Freedom. Which is about the struggle of Nigerian women and Kenyan women, mostly Kenyan women, against British colonialism.
Are any of your other books
I'll have other books there. Okay. I will have a few copies of other books. And, I hope people come down and check it out.
Yeah, what time is it going to be?
It's going to be 7 o'clock.
Until 9? Okay. How do you feel about state intimidation towards what they may perceive as threatening activism, meaning that whatever is perceived as threatening through the eyes of people with elite economic and political power who choose to maintain their socioeconomic status by wreaking havoc, loss, and suffering into the lives, into other people's lives? And the working class and poor people of the world, which is the majority of the world, they are the ones who suffer from the intentionally fucking over people to get ahead type of choice. I use that word just because it relates more to one of your books. I ask this because historically and presently, artists have been seen as dangerous threats to dictatorship type people in power, whether it be corporate or state power, because they are truth tellers and show people that the lives that we live don't have to be the way that they are. Are you paranoid by that?
I'm paranoid about the state because I have an uncle who was in the Communist Party and they did terrible things to him. So, yeah, I'm paranoid about that. In the U.S. I could be paranoid without being political. There are people who mess with you anyway.
True.
The world's full of people who mess with you. That's why there's a radical movement. There are people who are imprisoned for their ideas in the U.S., particularly Mumia Abu-Jamal, who I think was framed because of his advocacy of groups like MOVE and really radical groups. We are struggling to try to get him back out on the street, although that looks very difficult right now. But I'm I don't think the world is any more frightening as a political person than it was to me as an apolitical person, to be quite honest. I find being apolitical and being able to only look at the world around you as a series of disconnected events is far more frightening to me than having an analysis and knowing why someone does something to me and where that comes from. I think that's the most frightening thing in the world, is to not understand your environment.
It's scary when people numb their hearts.
But I think a lot of people have no process to resolve their contradictions. Okay. They have nothing there that they can do. And that's why I always emphasize political action in comics, because people need more than anything to be given an option. That everything in media is set up to present you with no options of changing the way things are. So you can feel any way you want about it. It's going to persist.
Can you talk a bit more about, for those who aren't familiar with your work, over the last few decades, we talked about these two books and what else?
You want a list of the books?
Yes, please.
Okay. I've been a founding editor and on the editorial board of a magazine called World War III Illustrated since 1979. It's now going into its 40th issue, which comes out in February. My work generally appears in that magazine. I have a number of books out with other publishers. The earliest one is called You Don't Have to Fuck People Over to Survive, which is going into its third printing. The other books include a book called War in the Neighborhood, which, as I said, focuses on the squatters movement in the Lower East Side in the 1980s. I have another book called Portraits of Israelis and Palestinians, which is about my first visit to the occupied territories, and it's in sketchbook form. They're pages from my sketchbooks. I have another book I worked on collaboratively with a group of different artists called Three Cities Against the Wall, and it was an art show of Israeli, Palestinian, and American artists all opposed to the building of the wall. And it was an art show that was shown in Tel Aviv, in New York, and it was supposed to be shown in Ramallah, but there were problems with that, and it wound up being shown in the Palestinian Institute in Hebron. Then I have Disaster and Resistance, which is my most recent published book.
And you're working on one?
I'm working on right Understanding the Crash, which is about the American financial crisis. These people want my time.
So, well, thank you so much.
I got to teach your class.
Any last words? Just say, oh, I guess not.
Any last words?
Any last imparting, maybe some advice or anything?
Yeah, just that I've been really impressed with everyone I've met here in Guelph and the political organizing going on here, and I think, people should continue.
Thanks so much.
Okay.